Sauce is forever.
Sus. Welcome to the New York Times Podcast, your bulletproof man purse smoking a blunt in the front row of a fashion show of music news and criticism. Let's get it! I'm John Caramonica. Thing that you were just listening to, that musical construction, that's the sauce. That's the sauce. That's Justin Timberlake, the man of the woods. And you may think, well, John, I've been waiting for this man of the woods, Justin Timberlake, Super Bowl pop cab. Been waiting for it. Been waiting for these darts. Been waiting for this. Blah. And I'm sorry to tell you that that is not what is on offer today. I want to use Justin as an object lesson, and when it comes to object lessons, is no better teacher than Justin Charity.
Hello.
Justin Charity is a writer at The Ringer and one of two hosts, Justin Camp, of Damage Control, which is one of the many Channel 33 podcasts. Shout out to, should we shout out some other Channel 33 podcasts while we're here?
Yeah, shout out Pressbox. Yeah. Shout out Jam.
Bachelor Party?
Yes.
Yeah, shout out to Bachelor Party, which I would love to be invited back onto.
You were on Bachelor Party?
I was. Yeah. I think I was too lit for Littman.
Littman's too lit for Littman.
That's true. Julia. True story. Too lit for anyway, free John for Bachelor Party. Anyway, so Justin is here. Not to
me, not of, Timberlake. Timberlake is not in the building.
No, that's true. Does that happen a lot when people say Justin's in the building and they think it's Timberlake?
No, because I wouldn't have made Sauce. No one is going to ever mistake me for a guy who would have made the song that you opened the podcast with. God. No one would.
Oh my God. All right. Well, once everybody gets back up off the floor. Wow. So Justin's been tweeting lately. How's that working?
I'm trying to tweet less, man.
Yeah, seriously.
Tweet less.
I respect that. So Justin's been tweeting lately, and the thing that you've been tweeting about is these moments of almost like critical groupthink fomented on Twitter in a very specific moment, and kind of how there's a lot of, I would say what you're arguing is that there's a lot of hypocrisy going on, that people who felt one way in a previous moment in time are very content to pile on in the opposite direction in a current moment in time. And then there's kind of no consistency. There's no kind of like, whether it's moral or aesthetic or critical consistency between that. People are just kind of, they're content to go with the groupthink of the moment.
Well, I wouldn't call it hypocrisy. I would call it incoherence, right? Because hypocrisy, I feel like, is implies
actual like ideology at work.
Right. Yeah. Whereas instead, it feels more like criticism, like post-web Twitter pace criticism.
Yes.
Sort of turns on dimes, and those dimes, it feels like the explanations are catching up to the mood swing.
Well, there are no explanations, right?
Yeah.
No, it's like, it's a little like,
it's chaotic.
It's Bitcoin.
It's chaos criticism.
It's Bitcoin-ish.
It's Bitcoin going with chaos criticism.
It's crypto. It's crypto. Is this crypto criticism?
Oh my God.
Did we just invent that?
Listen.
Yo, buy low. Buy low. and a hodl. So talk a little bit about how this has come into play vis-a-vis Justin. Because obviously your man.
My man? Is that my man?
Okay. The man. The boy. out here getting thrashed, righteously thrashed. And again, I don't want to dwell too much on the two pieces I wrote about Justin Timberlake. One about how the album is, and the other one about how the Super Bowl show was. But I think I am not alone out here in feeling this way.
Right.
However, I was surprised that even within, I felt somehow within the Twitter context my pieces were actually fairly well tempered. They're fairly even keeled.
Yeah, just I would say in the broader context, in the fan context, he is sort of this. He's this very dramatic scapegoat.
Yes.
It's not. That's the thing. The sort of turn against Justin Timberlake. It would be one thing if this album, Man of the Woods, which is not great.
Good.
Or good, even.
Yes.
It would be one thing, I think.
It is an album, though. I can confirm that.
Sure.
It is a full length
album. It feels very full.
It's full. It's full. And it's lengthy.
Yeah. I feel like if it had just been a case of the singles coming out, people not liking the singles, the album coming out, people being like, this thing is a brick, right? That is more intelligible to me, because I think musically it's very, nothing has ever sounded more post-peak.
Yes.
Than Man of the Woods.
True. And to be fair, I would have said the same thing about the 2020 experience.
Yeah. I think that album has more redeeming qualities. I don't know. I still think Suit and Tie is embarrassing. But anyway, I think
as I said on Twitter on Super Bowl night, my guy, this is not an actual hit.
Right, exactly.
Not a real hit.
Right.
My guy.
If the backlash against Timberlake had started there,
yes.
I feel like I would be working in an environment
in
that
a frame,
I get.
Yes.
But it seems like all of it predates the songs, and really the backlash sort of, I think if I'm giving the most credit, you could say, sure, there are a lot of people who turned on Justin Timberlake with Suit and Tie, like mm-hmm. that era of Timberlake, which was not great, or turned on him with Can't Stop the Feeling from the mm-hmm. Trolls 2 soundtrack.
Can we just, while we're listening to bad Justin Timberlake songs, let's listen to Can't Stop the Feeling. I just want to go on the record and say I'm not listening to it. I'm making everyone who's listening to this listen to it. So you're welcome.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. Come on, like the way we rock it. So don't stop. When you dance, 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 feel a good, good creeping up on you. So just dance, 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 come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance.
Okay, now that everybody has been thoroughly, your drains have been snaked. We're now back to the conversation.
I think if the backlash to Timberlake, I think charitably I would say that there are people who turned on Justin Timberlake.
How is that not your podcast name, charitably speaking?
Because I have never been that charitable. That's
the that's the punchline.
That's the punchline.
That's the punchline. Okay,
it's too on the nose.
When you get like the fire like newspaper column 5 years from now, like when you hit Dan Barry spot, it's gonna be like charitably speaking with like the wild.
Are you imagining a hologram newspaper? Like, give me the credit of a futuristic newspaper.
Oh, that sounds,
you know,
that sounds.
We're
actually
we're in the New York Times.
You
winning,
end up. You
saying.
End up. Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah. Speaking of augmented realities. This podcast is an augmented reality. It's going to be you hologrammed into every living room being like, charitably speaking.
No.
Okay.
I don't like that at all.
All right, fine. I'm pitching it.
But okay, let me run this by you.
Yes.
I don't think that the backlash to Timberlake necessarily starts with those songs so much as the way it seemed to congeal online this album cycle.
Yeah.
It congealed the moment Timberlake released basically the trailer. How would you describe it? The video promoting Man of the Woods, which had no music from Man of the Woods.
The visual.
The visual, as that's what we say in rap and R&B.
Who are you, a SoundCloud rapper?
Right, exactly. But when he released the, how long was the video, the promo teaser?
Two and a half, three minutes.
Right. Did it have any, I don't think it had any music from the album.
I don't think, no, not from the album.
Right.
No, I think it might have had like
some ambient music?
Yeah, or like some effects of some kind.
And in the video, he's walking in nature.
He's got the wild fringe coat, and he like does the quick turn, and the fringe turns just by. Yeah. Hashtag menswear.
That's. But to me, that's where you have this moment of the moment that quote unquote visual gets released online. It seems like people take turn on him on that moment.
Why though? I think I know why, but okay, so here's my take on why. So Justin Timberlake is obviously an artist who in the past has opted to partake of black aesthetics as his foundation.
Right.
And people have by and large let that man slide, even if he has done some sus things along the way. Someone, a friend of mine who shall remain nameless, recently pointed out to me at Justin Timberlake's wedding or in advance of his wedding, some of his friends like interviewed homeless people and like made a video like of homeless people thinking. And people are just like, Justin, he's fine. He's basically fine. But there have been these moments along the way where you're like, actually, dude, are you really about this? Or are you wearing the costume? Now, here's a moment where he seems to be perfectly saying, it was a costume and I don't have to wear it anymore. And like, I'm reaccessing my white self.
Sure, but I thought it was interesting that people made that deduction based off of the 3-minute video.
And not a song.
Right, because especially because the album walks that back a lot.
Oh, of course.
And that's what is interesting.
But he didn't put out any disinformation to make you think otherwise.
Sure.
And also, I forget who wrote this piece. Someone wrote a piece that basically was like, well, let's not kind of like erase the black history of American roots music, and et cetera. Which, of course, it's a parallel.
Right. People immediately coded nature as white in a weird way.
Right.
Maybe, or I think they really coded is they coded being in nature, but well dressed.
Right.
Decently or well dressed.
But with an American Express black card.
Right, right, right. Being in nature with a black card is white. Right. There we go. That was one of the first deductions that we made about the rollout was that video and that particular processing of Justin Timberlake's aesthetic. And it seeming, like you said, it seemed like he was changing costumes in this way that maybe reflected.
He was also
poorly.
In Montana. There was like that kind of like, he like returned, did some songwriting in Montana on that John Mayer thing where it's like, I'm just going to go into the woods and come out a real man. And Timberlake, I think, in so much as Justin Timberlake was getting away with anything in the, say, 02 to 06 period, it was because people forgave him a certain amount of buffer because he's coming out of a boy band. So he's coming out of a system where he's presumed to not have control. And so any kind of, like, missteps or overlooked things or elisions or whatever that happened in those first few years, I mean, keep in mind, this is all pre-Twitter. Like, this is
that,
like,
well, that's what I was going to say, because I would not say that that's there's that half of the answer, but the other half of the answer is just that the
criticism wasn't up
the
to
politics
speed
of criticism, right? Right. It was just different. He was operating in a much safer zone.
And I think what ultimately happened, and as we're jumping ahead, is I think Justin thought, I think he thought it was all sweet.
Oh, he thought it was sweet.
He thought it was sweet. Yes. He thought he was still living in 06. He didn't even catch the beginning of like the 12-11 backlash.
Right.
In his mind, he's still, and I said this right off the rip in my review, like, he is not a contemporary relevant superstar.
Right.
And I think that idea, that's why I wanted to put that front and center, because I felt like we needed to reframe the entire conversation about Timberlake. That was just, from a critical perspective, that was important to put out there. But I think what happened is he thought it was all sweet, and he walked into 2018 Twitter, fringe flying.
Buzzsaw.
It's a wrap.
Canceled.
Like a postmark. Got postmarked.
But it is weird that his outdatedness, his very abrupt outdated, not abrupt, it's gradual, but it's just that he's very suddenly confronting it, is both musical and social, right? Because he has, it's like first they came for Robin Thicke. And that, you know, Robin Thicke got out the paint. How many years ago was that? Like 2013?
Oh, yeah, he got ejected.
He was ejected from the
Your
paint.
Man Bol Bol just came and swooped him out the paint.
Right.
Like, ba-dang.
Timberlake had more hits. He sort of, Timberlake lasted an album cycle longer than
Robin Thicke.
Well,
your man thought he was Teflon. Like, he really, like, and when I say he thought it was all sweet, like, what I really mean is he really thought that he could play fast and loose with aesthetics. He thought he did not have to engage with cultural politics. Like, all of that stuff did not matter at all to the essence of his 2006 celebrity, for good or bad. And Twitter was not operating at full speed at the last comeback moment 6 years ago or 7 years ago. But this world, now, admittedly, you and I, we live on Twitter, or at least we live close to Twitter. We're in the, maybe we're in the slightly better neighborhood.
Yeah.
Twitter.
Yeah. I live by the exit.
You like the highway exit.
Highway exit. I live by the
exit.
That's fair.
I like to think I live in like the sort of like rather plain housing development that's like one exit.
That's
over.
Fair. I agree with that characterization.
Like, I can kind of like see it out my window. I'm like, oh, there's Twitter. Yeah. You know, like, I'm not in it. But he, certainly him and no one around him, knew what was coming. It doesn't seem.
Right.
Because everything that he has done up until this point has been incredibly blithe. And the buzzsaw came. But then let's talk about that buzzsaw. Let's talk about what you said on Twitter, man.
It seems like there are, between the rollout of the teaser for that album.
Yeah.
The album itself, well, the single's coming out, yes. And people sort of being very not hot on the single.
No. Although
I like
a half bop.
Yeah, it's a half bop. I agree with that. The album coming out, again, not being received that well, and then the Super Bowl performance, or the Super Bowl performance comes, what, the weekend before or the weekend after? I can't remember.
After the album.
Right.
Yeah, album's Friday.
Super Bowl Sunday. And by Super Bowl Sunday, that whole weekend, there's the whole controversy.
The Prince.
There's a controversy involving the late Prince.
Yes. So just to set the stage, Prince is dead.
Yes.
Prince is from Minneapolis.
2 years ago. He's from Minneapolis where the Super Bowl was.
Right. And so reportedly, Justin was going to be performing with a hologram of Prince. However, the people who run like the Prince.org fan groups or whatever knew that there was some interview from 1999 where Prince said holograms are demonic.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think holograms existed in this way in 1999. But anyway, it's not.
It was a ghost in the shell type thing at the time. It was like, this might be on the horizon.
Yes.
It was prophetic.
So anyway, you know, Prince didn't like to be recorded even in interviews. Obviously, he certainly didn't want his data fed into a machine and like spit out lasers so that Justin Timberlake could dance with him.
Right.
That's
sure.
Certainly not. And who could blame him?
Right.
So Justin ends up not, just for the clarity, he ends up not performing with a hologram. Reportedly, he got shook and instead took a king-size bedsheet and hung it from the roof of the stadium.
Projection, right.
Yes, it was like literally like your high school science class projector on a king-size bedsheet.
Right, and it was a brief, in the context of what? It's not that long of a performance
30
overall,
seconds,
but
40
30
seconds yeah.
of, what was it, I Would Die For You?
I Would Die For You. Yeah. Should we listen to actual I Would Die For You?
We should, because Prince's music is on Spotify now.
Hey!
Finally.
No lawsuits.
Oh, man. An important thing also, apart from the demonic hologram angle, mm-hmm. is the supposed, I guess you would call it, feud between Prince and Justin Timberlake.
Yes, like sort of like never an overt thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, is Prince ever like on record being I dislike Justin Timberlake?
No, it's sort of very subtweet level interview.
Are you a sus boy?
Lyric, right. Or, yeah. You know, like R&B these days, am I right? And Timberlake sort of biting back at that on Sexy Back. But this is years ago. Like, how old is Sexy Back?
2005, five right. or six.
And it's not like this is a thing that from then.
It's, you know,
it's not like Prince in interviews to his dying day was like, I can't stand that Justin Timberlake.
Right. It was so not a part of either of their narratives in right. a serious way. It also is worth mentioning that Prince had the best halftime show of all time.
Yeah, that is also. Yes, thank you for bringing that up.
Just important to note. Like, if I was Justin Timberlake, I would not duet with Prince in any format just because I wouldn't want to remind people that Prince was way better than me.
Right. I mean, he had to do some manner of tribute because the Super Bowl. I feel he had to do some manner of tribute.
Sure.
Because the Super Bowl, you know.
Could have worn like purple sneakers or something.
He could have, but it would have been weird if he had only done a medley of Justin Timberlake songs and just had like the purple bedsheet hanging, but otherwise just. I think it would have been strange. Because Prince's death was, it really was a, since we're talking about how consensus plays out on yes. social media, like Prince's death was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way it unfolded on social media, I'd say Prince and David Bowie in
yeah,
turn,
sure.
right? The way it played out was very cathartic and broad and massive. And I just, you know, that level of importance, I think Justin Timberlake was trying to meet that. And at the same time, it's like Justin Timberlake is this guy whose music is infused with funk, and he's clearly doing. I mean, on this album, it's weird. There are some Prince flows, as we say, on this
yeah,
album.
But like, I will say, like,
he couldn't have not done anything other than just the visual.
Let me ask you this, and I don't want to dwell too much on the actual music, but like, have you ever previously thought Justin Timberlake is just a Bruno Mars?
No, I've never. I've never thought of him in the way that I think of Bruno as a karaoke machine until this album.
Until this album. It's a thing that I was gonna put in my beats, but I didn't. Mostly not to disrespect the god Bruno Mars.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, no one.
Who's going on tour again? By the way,
yes.
24K with Cardi. I'm definitely.
We're going.
Barclays, I think.
We're going. We're there
together. Let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Come find us. Come find us in the cheap seats. So I've never thought that about Timberlake.
Yeah,
and I. After this album, not only did I think that about Timberlake in 2018, but I began to wonder why I didn't think that about him
yeah.
in 2003 or 2006. And I wonder if the kind of consensus opinions of that era, even though they were formulated and kind of gathered in a different way than Twitter consensus in yeah. 2018, I wonder what was happening with those systems of consensus at that time.
So maybe that does explain the sort of the nature of the Timberlake backlash in a way, because that's a weird thing that happens in art sometimes is when it could be a musician, it could be a director, makes something bad. And it's not just bad in a way where you think this is bad. It's bad in a way that reveals things about previous work and undermines it.
Yes.
And just you can't really think of that artist the same again. And you're right. I see what you're saying about Man of the Woods, where all the album really does is reframe Timberlake's voice and sort of throw it up against way too many different genres for a single album to sort of chaotically. And you're just like, oh, his musical imagination is cheaper than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just disappointing.
And it's cheaper, and it's also way more. I mean, not that I never thought it was reliant on Timberland and Pharrell.
Yeah.
But it's so much clearer how yeah. reliant it is. Because like when
and
I
how
these,
he has no ideas outside of it. He doesn't know
saying.
Where to go.
Not even a clue. And like Pharrell, you know, Pharrell is just like, I want to make a 1974 soundtrack. And yeah. Justin's like, yeah, man, cool. Like that's basically it. Let's just listen to Higher, Higher, which is like a good song on Man of the Woods. It's a good song.
Stress is cruel. Pain's a lie. But you're special. Every level, success is cool, money is fine, but you're special, another level. Listen. Special. to Lucky Star. Eyeing each other, then we're laughing.
Okay, so to get back to kind of Twitter consensus, right? Or consensus opinion making. One of the things that you see on Twitter is this sort of like death of historical memory, right?
Yeah.
Everything is, you know, in the space of like the EKG, it's just a spike. Everything is just in the spike. There's no part of it is because you can't do deep reason stuff, threads aside. But why is that happening in such a particular way in this moment? Why is the criticism of this moment so ahistorical?
It seems to me that there is a, I would say broadly, and I think it's true in the reaction to Taylor Swift's album, you know, it's true in the reaction to Katy Perry's album, there is this demand, there is this anxiety of people needing to put artists in political contexts that they sort of resist. And Justin Timberlake certainly, I think, like you said, he slid throughout his career,
yeah.
Right? Like certainly post like boy band, he slides, he sort of avoids certain angles of critique. I wouldn't say from everyone, but I would say in terms of consensus,
yes,
he avoids
consensus,
certain
yes.
reads on who he is as a white boy doing R&B funk.
Yes.
Sort of karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
The way I looked at the backlash to Timberlake unfold was just that, like, yeah, he looks like the sort of white guy and presents as the sort of white guy that you're not allowed to uncomplicatedly like anymore.
Yes. Right? Well, that reflects just, a change just, in the last 5 years.
Right.
Just not a Twitter-specific thing, just like a life-specific thing.
Right.
An American politics and culture-specific thing.
Right.
So he can't just blithely, he can't be blithe.
Right, but the thing is that it's an impulse that I totally understand, and it's a cultural shift that I understand. It's unfortunately sort of artless, I guess is what it is.
Yeah, so let's talk about your skepticism of that, because like up until this point, everything we're saying sounds basically rational. Even if it's extreme, it's basically rational.
Yeah.
So then what's the skepticism?
Well, first of all, I will say I believe it's fine for people to be reasonable if not rational. And I think a lot of the criticism of Timberlake is reasonable, if not exactly rational, as like music criticism, right? And so I think the fact that the backlash formed not in response to the album or the songs, but largely in response to the aesthetic presentation, the aesthetic tease of the album.
Yeah, the positioning.
The positioning. Even when, I mean, the initial read was so off, it was like Justin Timberlake's going to make a country album, right? And the fact that that's where the backlash began, just it makes me think that it's ahistorical because we're not having an argument about a musician, right? You're just having an argument about a pop culture figurehead.
Right. Although just as a total sidebar, it's a very old media thing to do to release a thing that is visually out of step with your...
Wait, are you saying Timberlake's failure was that he was not on brand enough? He didn't...
I think that he didn't understand that in 2018, the package has to be complete.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like... No young artist is thinking about putting out music without thinking about the visuals. Your man's, you know, Smoke Purp is not thinking that way. You know, like none of that stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is like they took an old media where just like we made a fancy thing and then we made another fancy thing. And it kind of didn't matter if those fancy things spoke to each other.
Fair.
That felt like an old media way.
Fair. When I talk about the backlash to Timberlake feeling strange, so we explained all of the Prince backstory, right? I would say that backstory, that sort of weird tension between Timberlake and Prince, has taken on a prevailing prominence in people's
outsized.
Right. It's sort of the consensus has sort of cast it as a thing to point to and say Prince didn't like Justin Timberlake. That's one of many reasons that Timberlake is bad. And so when we talk about ahistorical, right, like the thing that seems strange about it is that all of that Prince setup and pretext for the idea of tension between them is like 12 years old.
Yeah.
It's a feud that I would say relatively few people cared about when it was actually happening.
Right.
And so it is strange that the one historical thing that people are reaching back to is a non-musical thing about Timberlake
mm-hmm.
that it really just didn't seem like anyone actually cared about until now.
Right. But do you think there's also the way that criticism on Twitter operates, where you can basically retweet something from this morning or retweet something from 10 years ago and it looks the same? Do you think it encourages a kind of cherry picking?
It definitely does. It definitely does. But here's where I'm more curious than feeling like I have answers is cherry picking new? I mean, cherry picking can't be new.
So what's
the sense in which it's unique in this?
I think just the speed of it.
Okay.
I think you can make more contentious arguments predicated upon, I don't want to say species information, but predicated upon selective information much faster and encourage reappraisal or conflict or whatever at a much faster clip than you could before.
Sure. Yeah. It's almost,
because right then, if this was happening in 06, like, I'd write something about it in like Vibe, and then like someone else would write something about it in Rolling Stone. It's like, it's not real. It's not discourse. It's people talking
It's Twitter logic. Well, Twitter logic has a very strange effect online. Whether you're talking about just fans and people who are online for fun, mm-hmm. or whether you're talking about journalists and critics on Twitter, the phenomenon of Twitter logic is something that is sort of, that reads like it's a piece of criticism, can sort of go out into the world. And it can sort of gain traction as a thing that's attractive at first glance, but it also ages very poorly if you think about it. Like, stuff, that's, I think, where we're talking about ahistorical criticism and
But is it designed for that? I guess the question is, because the only thing that I was really skeptical about when you were tweeting about this stuff was, I was like, is this just the new acceptable? Not, is this a rejection of some exalted idea that I maybe hold? Is this now not just normal, but kind of acceptable? Is this just what it is now?
Look, I think everything's intolerable.
Right.
I'm kind of mean and rude, right? Mm-hmm. And like, even as somebody who is trying to get the Justin Timberlake discourse to settle down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I think if people want to find new angles on how to be skeptical of pop musicians, it's probably a good thing.
But what would you have liked?
I just wish it read more.
That's what I was going to say.
Persuasively.
So what would you have liked to have seen done differently in this particular cycle? Because I've been fascinated by not just how fast your man has gotten pushed out the paint
right.
and how thoroughly, but also I barely see a peep of, but actually, I barely see a peep of, if you guys could just pay attention to this, maybe you would have a more nuanced, different, whatever perspective. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, I don't have a galaxy brain answer to it. I really do think it's just about the share of attention that people are paying to the music and the art versus how much people are paying attention to narrative craft and celebrity and marketing. Because again, it's just the thing that seems strange about Timberlake. And again, not in a totally unique way. It's a thing that I notice more and more. But it felt like people were having an argument about marketing materials. And I'm just like, I used to work in public relations. And I was just like, it's one thing if you're a corporation and something just blew up and you have to, you know, that's when you argue about a press release. But to me, that the fact that people were arguing over the aesthetics of a 3-minute trailer and that's when we canceled Justin Timberlake. It's just like you're arguing over preliminary marketing materials for an album, and that's not interesting to me.
Okay. See, I disagree with that because I think that was such a conscious head fake on his part, and I think it's totally fair game for critique and for backlash and whatever. But I've been so surprised because I feel like if Twitter had existed, not 2018 Twitter, but just Twitter as a medium, had existed in 2004 or 2006, the consensus group thing would have been like, Justin is great. He would have been like, there'd been stan culture, you know, like hashtag, like whatever. That all would have been the thing. And I'm not surprised that 2018's version of Twitter has the opposite of that. I'm not surprised about that. But what I am surprised about, and you sort of allude to this, is I feel like those are probably a lot of the same people.
Yeah. Oh, they definitely, yeah, for sure.
So then what happened to those people? Who hurt those people? Who hurt those people?
I don't. It seems like isn't that there's half of it that's a taste question, and there's half of it that's a wave question. And by, you know, yeah, by wave, mm-hmm, it's sort of like,
mm-hmm,
where do you feel like if you're sitting on Twitter and you look at Twitter as a place where you're trying to engage with people in a way where you want to resonate, like you want your take to resonate. That's the main thing you think about, is like, how can I phrase things and how can I frame my taste in a way,
mm-hmm,
that people will sort of pop up. I think there's just the sense in which you put your finger in the air and you're like, yeah, the Justin Timberlake aesthetic seems like it's on its way out. Like everything, it's not just Timberlake himself, and it's not just Timberlake's music, which people,
it's what he represents,
right? It's sort of you have that sense again. It's the same thing happened to Taylor Swift, where it's sort of, you could just feel it in the air that whatever the state of, again, Justin Timberlake's white boy, blue-eyed, mm-hmm, you know, you could tell that was in for a minute and was going to work. That's the difference. It's not the difference between hypothetical 2004 Twitter and 2018 Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's the difference between 2004 pop and 2018 pop.
Although, too bad, just the only argument against your point is that Taylor Swift made a great album. So
see, and you're not gonna do this to me. You're not gonna do this to me, man. That's so. You troll your guests? Is that the kind of podcast this is?
With the truth? Troll? Yeah, I troll them with the truth.
You just troll people?
I troll them with facts. I troll them with hard, hard truths.
Hey, don't play Ready For It on any of these breaks.
Are you sure?
No, please don't. Because I actually listen to this podcast, and I...
You mean you want to play a different song?
You can play any of the remaining Justin Timberlake songs.
Oh! Let's listen to one more medium-tolerable Justin Timberlake song from Man of the Woods. And that is Montana, which is a song and a state of being. So, to talk about waves, which don't die, here's the thing about waves, right? I am maybe, I don't want to say alone, but I am maybe in a minority where I don't put an opinion on Twitter unless I feel it's absolutely essential to share or shape a conversation. I just don't.
What is an example of an essential John Carmonica tweet? What are your most essential tweets?
Here's the thing.
I'm
proud to say I don't have essential tweets. I think that's an important thing. Although, like, okay, for example, this morning when I was in the car, in the cab, on the way to get my hair cut, here's something.
You just described a lot about your life.
I did, right? It's a true story.
We even got to the tweet.
Yes. So here's the thing. I've been thinking a lot about the Grammys, obviously.
Music's biggest night.
Yes. And by big, we mean bloat. So I've been thinking a lot about the Grammys, and I've been thinking a lot about institutions. And a thing that I felt needed to be said, I feel people don't remember, is that the Recording Academy is not like bestowed upon the planet by God. It's not something that we can't undo. It's not something you can't have a competitor to. It's not like you can. So I felt like I needed to put that idea in the world.
Okay.
So a reminder that anyone can start a whole new Recording Academy or similar body and create peer-presented awards that would be better representative than the Grammys, presuming awards matter.
Right.
Which they don't.
People could also watch the BET Awards.
Please.
You know.
Which I've written about. Yes.
Yeah. It's like.
There's.
Yeah.
Yes.
People's angst about stuff like that is so weird because there are actual alternatives.
Yes. No, but I felt like sometimes that I wanted to put that idea in the world. Yeah. But I feel like most people don't treat Twitter that way.
Okay.
Most people treat Twitter, and I think wave is actually the right way of putting it, which is that they look behind them and they see a wave coming and they know that the wave is going to wash over them. And they're like, I'm going to ride or participate or contribute to this wave. And in one wave might be going yay way, then the other wave might be coming the other way. But it is this kind of constant negotiation of the self to the collective. That's how I feel a lot of people use Twitter. And I find that very dispiriting because, number one, it's bad for discourse. But also, I feel like it's fundamentally untrustworthy.
It is. And the thing that – one thing I find uniquely frustrating about it is those waves and those waves move so rapidly that my better instinct that my editors enforce –
Shout out to your editors.
In my worst
shout, your, shout out your editors.
Shout out to Hannah Gyorkis. Shout out to Amanda Dobbins.
AK Dobbins, Hannah. Yo, salute great editors.
But what, you know, in my worst moments, they are the people that sort of grab me by the shoulders and say, write about this on the website. You don't need to tweet about this so much as you need to write about it and do the full criticism.
Yes.
But those waves move so fast that it's tempting to not write and instead tweet because you're trying to counteract that wave
that
and those
wave,
people who are
right.
thinking that way.
And you want to meet them where they're at.
Right.
You don't want to be like, read this thing on a website.
That, and even if you get it up, like, you know, hours later, it still feels like you've already lost that fight.
Right. And also there is this sense of the wave. If you want to be in opposition to the wave, there is this sense that you literally have to throw your body in front of it.
Exactly.
Hands up and be like, no. Everybody turn like Moses. Like everybody turn around. Go the other way.
Right.
That's the instinct. Right. And that's what Twitter does. And that's why it's ahistorical. Because it is just this series of waves. And you almost can't pinpoint origins. You can only pinpoint directions and swells. And that's sort of why the same people who are maybe super pro Justin Timberlake in 2004 or 2006 are the same people who are washing him in 2018. I don't know how much it has to do with actual dislike of Justin Timberlake. I was thinking a lot about, you know, that the concept of like tending towards the mean.
Yeah.
Twitter opinions are the opposite. It's tending towards the extreme. And so you have this wave coming, and it's like, well, I'm going to get on this wave, but I'm going to be like a touch more
arch about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the next person's like, I'm going to be even a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little bit more until, like, it's reductio ad absurdum and you're out of energy in whatever direction. That's how I feel those Twitter conversations play out. And that's why I don't want to participate in them. But I do think it is the primary way through which most young people understand what the idea of criticism even is in practice.
But then here's my question for you.
Yeah.
So you write for the Times. Do you feel like when you...
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Oh, my God. But do you, at the end of the day, great rapper phrase. Great rapper interview phrase, by the way, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, do you think
You know what I'm saying, though.
You put a piece up about a Justin Timberlake album.
Yes.
And this is a bad example because I think you and Twitter are sort of... in agreement about the Justin Timberlake album. What's the thing that sort of has shaped the discourse in the permanent way? Is it the Twitter wave that ultimately passes, or is it the fleshed out feature length criticism?
I think it's the Twitter wave.
Yeah.
I mean, and I say that like not to knock me.
So
or
even
any
in
other
the
critic.
Next album cycle, you're not really following from what your past review is. You're following from what you know the state of the.
I mean, I think
about.
I am because I'm trying to like answer to my own muse.
You're transcendental.
It's been said. but you know, I think that there is a narrative through line to my criticism that I try to stick to.
Yeah.
That I'm telling that story. I'm not ignorant of the other story, and I'm not acknowledging it. And when it's relevant, especially when I'm at odds with it, I feel like I'll go out of my way to acknowledge it, but it doesn't change. I'm not writing my pieces to necessarily...
counteract.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
If I'm telling my story, I'm telling my story. And criticism, it's very important to remember, and this is just like a thing that I think is very obvious on Twitter, but is not very obvious in the pages of the New York Times or on TheRinger.com. Which is that criticism is a first-person medium, even if you don't use the word I.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a first-person medium. That is John Caramonica's opinion. That is Justin Charity's opinion. It's important to remember that. Now, that says you can come from me. You're not coming from the New York Times opinion. You're coming from my opinion. I get that. But it's always important to remember that, like, even if you're published in an institutionally-backed environment, it's still a first person medium. But I do think if you were to go, say, 12 months from now and like poll 500 people who are like 18 to 35 and be like, what was your take on the Justin Timberlake album? What's your vibe on him right now? And how did you arrive at it? Most of those people, you could trace it back to the Twitter wave more than you can trace it back me being like, your man hasn't been relevant in 12 years.
Okay.
Although, to be fair, that thought got a lot of run on Twitter.
Yeah, that was a great live. That's a great read. That was a great open.
It
was a great open.
But I do think, in essence, the Twitter wave is probably more important. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I was just hoping you would give me a more optimistic answer.
No.
But I don't even know if it's necessarily optimistic or pessimistic, because, again, it's sort of... I feel like the cop-out thing that's true but still feels like a cop-out is to say, hey, at least Twitter is democratic, right?
Yeah.
It's more democratic than criticism.
Also, like, most people probably have opinions that you think are sus or wrong. You just don't interact with most people on a day-to-day basis. And Twitter puts those thoughts, in, like, right in front of you.
Right.
Even though Twitter can be self-selecting in terms of who you're following and da-da-da. But... you want to know who's riding for Justin Timberlake? So you want to know who's not on the wave?
Who's not?
Everyone who replies to the main NY Times Twitter feed when they post what I wrote about Justin Timberlake. Because all of those people are like, I thought I was just watching a halftime show. Why you have to talk like this?
Right, that's...
I got a bunch of those tweets. Like, it's really instructive. If you want to see how Twitter bifurcates... look at the responses to my post of the Super Bowl review or the album review and the replies to it, and then look at the replies to the NY Times main account post. You'll learn a lot about Twitter and waves.
As much as I humor, and I think I mostly buy into the theory of waves and the idea of like, yeah, as much as I buy into that theory, I also just think the other half of this is that fans and critics are struggling with not inventing, but sort of projecting new significances onto pop stars. And they don't always have the language to do it, and they don't always have the reasons why they need to apply a certain political significance, a certain social significance to Justin Timberlake or Taylor Swift. It's not a totally fleshed out thing yet, but there's this sort of very urgent, there just seems to be a very urgent appetite for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the critical paradigms for doing it just seem underdeveloped. And so that's why a lot of the thinking behind Taylor Swift is bad now, Justin Timberlake is bad now, even when I agree with it, even when I feel like, oh, this is basically correct, it feels like the specific ways that people have for making those cases feel... unpersuasive and shoddy, and like they're in like a grab bag. They just feel like grab bags of things where I'm like, I guess all of these things presented together sort of explain why Justin Timberlake is bad now, but no individual thing you're citing is that persuasive.
But also, it reminds me, I've been thinking a lot about the word canceled.
Canceled, right.
Which we talked about earlier. But like,
Justin Timberlake is definitely the subject of a cancellation.
Yes. But what would it take for Justin Timberlake to be uncanceled? Could he be uncanceled?
He would have to find a whole new sneeze.
But that's the thing. But here's the thing. That's the thing. But that's the thing with Twitter waves, right? Because if this had happened, if this level of antipathy had formed 10 years ago, I would have felt like it was not ephemeral. I would have felt like it was grounded. It was earned. This, even though I think it's earned, it still feels a little ephemeral.
Yeah, it feels made up.
And because of that, I think someone who gets canceled in this ecosystem can maybe just as easily get uncanceled. And that's something that I don't think Twitter is prepared to deal with.
Is there an example of somebody who's been uncanceled yet?
I think we're only just at early cancellation.
That's the thing. We're still the frontier.
It's too new. But we'll see. I have an idea. I know someone who got uncanceled.
Ooh.
Meek Mill.
Meek did. That is the weirdest uncancellation.
Talk about
the history of rap music.
Talk about a segue. Let's listen to Dreams and Nightmares.
Ain't this what they've been waiting for? You ready? You ready? I used to pray for times like this, to rhyme like this, so I had to grind like that, to shine like this. In a matter of time I spent on some locked up in the back of the paddy wagon, cuffs locked on wrists. See my dreams unfold, nightmares come true. It was time to marry the game, and I said, yeah, I do. If you want it, you gotta see it with a clear eye view. Got shorty, she try and bless me like I said I chew. Like a sneeze, please, for them trick and squeeze, I'm getting cream. Never let them get in between of what we started. Look, but I'm lying hearted. They love me when I was stuck, and they hate it when I departed. I go and get it regardless. Draw like I'm an artist, no crawling, went straight to walking with foreigns. And my garages are foreign, menaging, sucking and swallowing anything for a dollar. They tell me, get him, I got him. I did it without an album. I did it with Mariah. Lil, I'm on fire. Icy as a hockey ring, Philly flyer. When I bought the Rolls Royce, they thought it was lease. Then I bought that new Ferrari, hater, rest in peace. Hey, to rest in peace to the parking lot. Phantom so big, can't even fit in the parking spot. You ain't talking about my d- then what you talking about? Gangsters moving silent.
So speaking of uncancellations, as swiftly as Justin Timberlake has been excluded, pushed out, done, your man Meek Mill behind bars,
the prodigal,
incarcerated, as Amy Winehouse, rest, God rest the dead, says. For my Meek, incarcerated out here getting uncanceled. If you had asked me 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, was there ever a set of circumstances in which Meek Mill could be rehabilitated in that space? I would have said it's extremely unlikely. And now Meek Mill, I think, has been uncanceled. To answer your question, I think he has been uncanceled.
Meek Mill had to meet two conditions to be uncanceled.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he had to be in jail.
Yes.
And also, the second condition is that the Eagles had to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
So it was really threading the needle, yeah. Very, very carefully.
Yeah, and that it's weird because I always think of Meek Mill's story as a dark story. I think most incarcerated rapper stories are just very unfortunate stories for everyone involved.
Of course.
And so Meek Mill has just become a sympathetic figure in the same way that sort of Boosie.
Mm-hmm. And Meek, with that extra layer of, had seemed to be at the end of that arc.
Right.
Had
That's
seemed
what makes
to have
him
kind
remarkable.
Of like triumphed over it,
yeah.
Or at least gotten to the other side of it. And then has basically just been almost seemingly arbitrarily yanked back into it.
Right.
Although we don't know all the facts.
We don't, right.
Right. But
he's in a strange situation.
Yes, but the public perception is that there's something a little arbitrary and unjust about what's happening right,
right
now.
And almost surreal, though. I feel like there are some weird developments that have been reported out about his probation officer and the judge,
yes.
Case,
yep.
That, yeah, I think beyond it being arbitrary, his case is interesting. It's
yes.
Almost some David Simon level.
Yes, I'd like to. I'd like to read a long read about this.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
You working on a long read?
Not yet.
Okay.
Maybe not.
That's sign. Hana and AK.
This is how. That's how they get you.
That is
this
true.
Is how they get you. You go on podcast and you just
it's out here. Podcast. I'm just saying. A lot of people get story assignments off podcast.
Ooh.
People might get signed off podcast.
I'm just saying.
Used to be signed off a mixtape. Now you're just hot off a podcast.
Well, we should explain why Meek is a strange rehabilitation.
Okay, so let's dial back, say, 5 or 6 years on Meek Mill.
Yeah.
Early Meek Mill mixtapes are very, very good. Meek is a real shouty street rapper from Philadelphia. I think he's a very good storyteller. He has a very signature vocal approach. It's loud. It's urgent.
He's like 50 Cent, but loud.
Yes.
I feel like he's very post 50 Cent,
yes.
But he has this banshee energy to how he raps.
And that was something that nobody else at that time was doing, or really since. And his storytelling, I thought, was good on his first major label album, to the point where I double reviewed it with the Kendrick Lamar album. I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed. At the time, it made sense. So Meek Mill had this narrative where he was a bit of an underdog. Signs with Rick Ross, has a bunch of legal trouble, but also at a certain point gets involved with Nicki Minaj.
Right.
And that ups his profile, his clout, his general sense of, I don't want to say invincibility, but his overall public presence.
Right.
And then he ran into a most unlikely foe.
Twitter? And, well,
yes. That well, really was his second. Right. That's his second unlikely
that's
foe.
That's second.
His first unlikely foe is Drake.
Right.
Should we play?
Don't play his diss record. Play Drake's diss. Yeah, play back to back.
Yeah, you're not going to play. No. All right. Oh, so man. let's play back to back, which is Drake's very not surgical again. Undoing of Meek Mill.
Right.
Yeah, I learned a game from William Wesley. You can never check me. Back to back for the that didn't get the message. Back to back like I'm on the cover of Lethal Weapon. Back to back like I'm Jordan 96, 97. Whoa. Very important and very pretentious. When I look back, I might be mad that I gave this attention. Yeah, but it's weighing heavy on my conscience. Yeah, and you left the boy no options. I wanna see my go insane. You gon' make me step out of my frame. You gon' make me buy bottles for Charlemagne. You gon' make me go out of my way. I waited 4 days, where y'all at? I drove here in a Wraith playing AR app. I'm not sure what it was that really made y'all mad, but I guess this is what I gotta do to make y'all rap. I mean, ooh, can't fool the city, man, they know what's up. Second floor tussies getting shoulder rubs. This for y'all to think that I don't write enough. They just mad cause I got the Midas touch. You love her, then you gotta get a world tour. Is that a world tour or your girl's tour? I know that you gotta be a thug for her. This ain't what she meant when she told you to open up more. Yeah.
So that was a thing. What year was that? Maybe like 13, 14?
It feels like 1913.
It does feel.
It was a long time
yes.
ago.
Yes. Say 3 to 4 years
and
ago.
It's, and by the way, that's the second. So back to back is the second diss track that Drake releases mm-hmm. against Meek. The first is a bad song called Charged Up.
Yes.
All of this happens in response to Meek
alleging that Drake had used ghostwriters.
Right.
And. Who can say, really?
Well,
Quentin Miller, if you're listening to the podcast, podcast@nytimes.com, DMs are open. So Meek basically tried to take down Drake.
Right. He took the shot.
He took the shot because
no one else would. And
because
this is
Drake didn't tweet his album
right.
or whatever. But Meek tried to take down Drake basically using like Robert's Rules of Order.
Right. That's correct. Right.
It's like you do not participate in the hip hop parliament the way that our forefathers
right.
have determined, you know, the way that Guru and right. Q-Tip, when they had in a room with Rakim and KRS-One, and they have a scroll with 36 rules of rapping, and you are in violation of numbers 24, 31, and 35. That's what Meek came with.
Yeah.
And Drake came with the...
My songs are hot.
I'm famous.
I'm famous and my
I'm
songs
so
are hot.
I'm so good. I'm really good. And the thing about Drake is Drake had never been tested like that before.
Right.
And so I think the popular perception of Drake at that time was that he might crumble. But the fact that he didn't crumble actually gives rocket fuel to this era of Drake, which is a tough Drake era, and where he remains kind of like on top or on the throne. And Meek, who it turns out doesn't really have very many hits and doesn't have a lot of institutional support,
right.
just literally collapses into dust.
Right. And he doesn't just collapse into dust commercially or critically. He collapses into dust among mainstream rap fans.
Yes.
Right. His esteem just evaporates overnight.
The people who were supposed to be his core.
Right. Even right. Because if you at the time I remember thinking, this is interesting to watch because if you summon all of rap fandom into a stadium,
yeah.
you would have thought that his argument would have gotten some traction, right?
Yes.
Like the Robert's Rules of Order, you know, you use ghostwriters, how dare you, sir?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an argument that would have won the day. I don't think it's a very persuasive, like, post-Little Wayne, post-Kanye
sure.
argument. But you would have thought that he wouldn't have lost the entire stadium. You would have thought he'd maybe lose like 2/3 of the stadium.
Yes.
But instead he lost the whole stadium.
The whole stadium. Except for like,
no one
like one, maybe one section in the bleachers.
Right,
like the
right.
super, super cheap seats.
Right.
And so Meek got canceled.
Right.
Even Rick Ross was kind of like, I don't know that guy. I don't know him.
Yeah. I mean, Meek Mill got canceled for not liking Drake. That is how I would summarize it.
Which is a very Twitter circa 2014, right. 13, 2015 opinion. Beast. Yeah. It's right. It's a very Twitter wave right. opinion. Meek was the guy like with his hands up being like, don't, no wave. No, stop it.
And in fact, we can't just talk about back to back. We have to talk about OVO Fest. Because to me, that was the moment where Drake puts out back to back. People love that song. Meek finally puts out his response track, Wanna Know.
Yes.
Not great. It's just the production's a catastrophe. He's talking about Chris Brown on it for some reason. WWE, because he uses like the Undertaker sample on it, gets it scrubbed from SoundCloud 12 hours after.
Oh, I forgot.
It's just
that.
A lot of clumsy stuff happens. No one likes Meek's response. Right. So at that stage, at the back to back stage, Drake has already sort of won it. Because back to back is a hit record. It's this song.
It's this song that you're going to hear in the club.
Right. But I feel like the nadir for Meek is OVO Fest.
Yeah. And I was there at OVO Fest that year. And I have a very, very vivid memory.
Talk about it. Because people
don't remember.
People don't remember. Let's remind people what happened at OVO.
So OVO Fest comes. There's something kind of almost feral about Drake in that moment. It was great theater, really great theater. And so they're playing back to back, or they're launching into back to back, or maybe they start, which I can't remember the song rollout. And the screens behind Drake start showing memes. And again, remember, this is 14 or 15. This is, I don't like early meme. Yeah. And Drake basically gathering all the memes that had been made that were anti-Meek Mill memes. Maybe made some of his own, I don't know, but basically gathered them up and just played them in a loop as a way of saying, like, the internet doesn't mess with you. Like, you are literally the laughingstock. You are the butt of the joke of the language of the internet.
Right.
And Drake understood rightly that stadium that you were talking about, that stadium was the internet. Drake understood that.
Right.
Meek thought that stadium was West Philly.
Right, he really did, right.
You know? Right. But, like, Drake understood that it was the internet. And so people there lost their minds.
It's great because memes have this advantage, too, of it's not just a reel of things that make Meek Mill look silly and sort of signal that the internet doesn't mess with you, but it's also this way that Drake is validating all of his fans. Almost individually. It's almost like writing them all individual thank you notes.
He's validating them and they are validating him.
Right.
And the thing that Drake understood about the internet very early, and this was also very true, this was really the most true in the Hotline Bling era, was like Drake understood that contemporary fandom is allowing your fans not just to touch you, but to remake you, to use you for their purposes. To make a meme or to put a video of you on there, whatever. It is not top down celebrity.
It's absolute fan fiction.
It is granular and it is fan fiction. Yeah. And so what Drake did by acknowledging the meme ecosystem was say, I understand that this is where this battle has taken place. And it also shows Meek, you have no people. I have all these. I don't even pay these people.
And he, right. And he did. So like, that's the thing that's important to underscore is that there was that point, and OVO Fest is the point where you looked around and Meek had no people.
Zero
people. And so now you fast forward to now.
Well, so then, so Meek was canceled, but not for the same reason that someone like Justin Timberlake was canceled.
For sure.
He was canceled because
Meek Mill did not appropriate white culture.
No.
He didn't do, you know what I mean? He didn't.
No, it's just his show was not renewed.
Right, right.
It was like low rated.
Right.
And so it was not renewed. Right. I don't want it to seem like we're ragging on Meek at all as a musician. I think he's a very good rapper. I think he maybe is a little one note, but he's a very good and compelling rapper. Let's throw to a Meek song, Justin. What would you like to hear?
I say we should play his verse from Made It From Nothing,
okay,
his latest album, which is sort of his like post-mortem response to Drake.
Okay, so let's listen to a little bit of recent Meek and Hold Hands.
I'm blinding with the wrist. Hey, it feels good when you make it from nothing. I grow like that, so I can shine like this. Them diamonds on my wrist. It feels good when you came from nothing.
North Philly in my bloodstream. South Philly from my dad jeans. I could wear my dad jeans. Put my mom and sister a new crib when that cash came. Put some respect up on my last name. No better feeling see my cousin serve his last thing. No better feeling see Lil Poppy talking French to me. All this money will never get to me. Why you think you never hear about what they did to me? 100 bands, quarter milli talking big money. I want you dead, ain't nobody stopping. Cause honestly, we give a f*** about your big homie. Posted in the jungle with a ladder. How can they compare me to a rapper? Did it for attention cause he had to. Broke their opinions, never mattered.
Damn, it feels good from way up here.
There is no universe where anybody thought Meek Mill would ever come back to anything. And so talk a little bit about what's happened in the last 2 weeks.
Well, the legal drama with Meek Mill has played out for what? That's been like a...
It's been a while.
It's been a few years.
It's been a few years. And also, but this most recent, like him getting sent back to jail.
Right.
This is maybe the last 5 months?
Right.
6 months?
Right. Even after sort of the Drake beef cooled off, it's like Drake did some Philly tour stops where he came through and just insulted Meek and was insulting him all across the Summer 16 tour while Meek was going through a wave of legal trouble. And so more recently, Meek's gone back to jail and he's put out music. He's put out a couple of tapes in the past couple of years.
And they were actually okay.
Yeah. But I would say that the fandom sort of like coming back to Meek has not been anchored in any of those music releases, right? They've just been anchored in this increasing slow drip Twitter attention to the trial and attention to like how much Meek Mill resonates with a lot of broader sentiments about prison reform and police reform and the criminal justice system. And so he has
criminal injustice.
Well, criminal injustice. I hate you so much, John. As more people in Philly and more people nationally have paid attention to his court case, that's the thing that has sort of made him or remade him as a sympathetic figure. He's sympathetic not on any sort of musical terms whatsoever. It's mostly that his narrative is in such a dark place. It was in a dark place because of Drake, but now it's in a dark place in a way that is anchored in politics and reality. And that's the moment at which you see these news stories about like the Philadelphia Eagles listening to the Dreams and Nightmares intro in the locker room and at practice and at games. I mean, I feel like that's when the narrative, right, starts to almost out of nowhere come back to Meek Mill.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to slightly speed up towards the Super Bowl, you have the Patriots. The quarterback is a seeming Trump supporter. And then you have Philadelphia Eagles, who do not appear to have many Trump supporters on their team. The Patriots are a much more successful team Super Bowl-wise and championship-wise. The Eagles are pure underdogs. There's racial angles as far as those two teams go.
There's a lot of loaded politics.
Seriously. And it just so happens that there is another underdog with a lot of loaded politics who happened to make a song that... another decade or maybe an actual national anthem.
Right, right, totally.
An actual.
Totally.
And the embrace of that song by the Eagles begins to underscore not just the kind of exile that Meek Mill has been sent on, both culturally, politically, and sort of in the justice system, but also addressing larger issues about race in the NFL this season. And obviously there's more attention being drawn to the actual specific of Meek Mill's case. And so Meek Mill, all of a sudden, really in just like a 3 or 4 week span, went from
canceled.
Right. Canceled to very
unceremoniously canceled.
To very much prime time.
Right. How do you feel about that turn? That's really there's a sense in which because the politics that are a part of Meek Mill's rehabilitation are so loaded.
Yeah.
And they're so political. It almost seems like you have to do, if you're a person who really turned on Meek, if you're a Drake stan.
Yes.
Really turned
on
Meek.
What would that be like? I wouldn't have any idea.
Totally turned on him during OVO Fest. Totally turned on him. How dare you cross Drake? If you were one of those people, it just seems like you have to do a lot of personal
contorting.
And so it, personal and critical revisionism of how you thought of Meek during that feud versus how you think of him now. And again, it's one of those things that I don't know that I would describe it as hypocrisy. I would describe it as a wave.
But although it's interesting because you were sort of saying about Justin Timberlake that part of the thing that you were frustrated by is that people were not reacting to music. They were reacting to this aesthetic thing or this right. visual. But in this case, they're not reacting to music either. They're reacting right. to politics.
Totally.
I mean, that song is transcendent, but like they're reacting to politics.
Yeah, if there's a piece of music they're reacting to, it is the Dreams and Nightmares intro.
Which is an incredible.
Right.
Like
and I'm glad that people remembered that, wait, this song is actually great.
Y'all thought it was ready? Okay.
But yeah, it is. You're right. It's the flip side of the same thing, which yeah. is this musicians. I just rappers are musicians.
Yes.
And these
don't forget
musicians rehabilitation is so it's so much about like a storyline and almost not at all about music.
So
and
do you not do you not trust it?
You mean in Meek Mill's case in particular?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, even though I mean, like Meek Mill's still in jail, like the Eagles won the Super Bowl. But, you know, that it's not like as much as people sort of wished it into existence that like if the Eagles win the Super Bowl,
Meek gets out.
Meek yes. gets out. Right. Yes. That was sort of the storyline I think people set up in yes. their heads. I mean, as good as it is for Meek Mill in this sort of vague way that doesn't do him a lot of good in jail, like I don't trust it. Because again, I my problem with this form, this mood of criticism is that it seems so anchored in celebrity and the art of being a celebrity, which I don't actually think of as art. I think of the celebrity's product as art. And
yeah, that's not true, but okay. It's,
and, well, let's actually hash it out. Because yeah, I mean, yeah. there are probably concessions I would make to that. I'm just speaking in the yeah. broadest possible terms.
Sure.
I like Meek Mill as a musician. My primary interest in him is as a musician. And I think it's infuriating that both of the turns and that so many turns for or against these musicians. I guess it's one thing if like a musician is on tape saying like a bunch of crazy stuff mm-hmm. that is just like, I don't want to deal with this person on some level that isn't about music, but is also just like reprehensible or something. But I am frustrated maybe in a broad sense by how much celebrity culture has overwhelmed arts criticism and overwhelmed sort of music.
Yes, although I guess at least in Meek's case, I actually think that he, even though he's being uncanceled partially for a piece of music, I think if there isn't that celebrity aspect to it, I don't think he's uncanceled.
That's true. I just
but you
think
that's not valid.
Have been canceled.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what I mean by don't trust it, even when the wave breaks in a way that is favorable to your critical perspective, it's sort of, I still step back and think, I don't like this wave-based paradigm in general because it's so whimsical. And
okay,
it leads to so much like disingenuous framing and frivolous framing.
Do you think Meek should have ever been canceled in the first place?
I don't.
I don't either. It's like the two things can coexist, right? Like the Drake that beats Meek or that defeats Meek rather, and the Meek that has been defeated by Drake can still both coexist.
Right.
One doesn't obviate the other.
Like we could think back to Nas and Jay, right?
Yes.
That's an example of a beef where like, I mean, that was a beef that was so vulgar. that beef got so vulgar and so personal and crude. And yet there was no point at which I felt like the impulse of rap one way or the other was to be like, as a result of this, Nas doesn't get to make music anymore.
Right.
And we're sort of like laughing at the fact that he is running into if he ran into legal problems at the same time as trying to take out Dre. Like, that's not how I remember rap beef playing out when I was the most into rap beef, which is to say when I was a child. Right?
Imagine if you were on Twitter at that point.
But I wasn't hoping that Jay-Z would get hit by a bus during Jay Nasby,
right.
You know?
As we're coming into a hard landing, do you feel like there's any remedy for this kind of wave-based Twitter cancellation or non-cancellation? Or is this just the new normal, like I was saying earlier, and we just have to accept that this actually is the conversation?
I have two answers.
Yes.
The first is, I mean, you know, like, I'm an extremist in a lot of ways. And my the easy answer is I think
extremely
Twitter
tasteful.
Should be deleted as a, you know,
right. It shouldn't exist. Yeah.
It does a lot of bad things, I think, to a lot of discourse and to a lot of people's.
I totally agree.
But I guess the secondary answer is, oh yeah, you totally have to accept that that's the paradigm. I mean, there's so many shifts that are like that, where it's sort of, I think about the shift all the time to streaming and like that, the idea of like rappers, it's just a part of a rapper's life now that they have to make mixtapes, and the pace of making mixtapes is totally different from the pace of making albums. And you can make all sorts of arguments about how it has affected the quality, like the quality control of music. And in some ways it sucks, some ways it doesn't. Either way, that's how it works now. And I think this is in the same boat, right? It's just a different pace and a different angle of thinking. And I think that there are more things that suck about it than don't suck. But I'm also at peace with the fact that, you know, it's a workable way to care about rap music. Even if I feel that as a critic, I have to spend a lot of my time contradicting it and working against it. Because unlike you, and like you were saying, like I am always sort of trying to push back and clap back at what I think is Twitter logic. And maybe that's an unproductive thing to get sucked into, and I should sort of just focus on my own biases and tastes. But
well, it's an everyday struggle.
It's an everyday struggle.
With that, let's go out on an exuberant Meek Mill song that will put smiles on your faces, a pep in your step, and hope in your heart. Let's listen to House Party.
Yeah. But it's going down. Welcome to my house party, party. 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 So rock all on my table. Just in the living room. They gonna ask you at the door. Only me and mine. Tell her bring a friend or two. Bottles popping, models watching. All of them out. Welcome to my house party.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. You are not canceled. You are not canceled. Thank you to my guest, Justin Charity, also not canceled.
Woo, listen to Damage Control.
Charitably speaking, coming soon to a hollow theater near you. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You can email us your thoughts on waves and Twitter cancellations.
Don't tweet us about waves.
Please don't tweet. Waves. No, yes.
Go email. For a relatively long form response.
I'd love to read
me.
Your long-form reads about waves at popcastnytimes.com. And please subscribe to the podcast. You can do that at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, various apps where you receive audio content. You know, we're definitely better than all the Channel 33 podcasts.
Oh, my God. So just the only way you know that is if you subscribe to Channel 33 on iTunes.
I don't know her. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media, and we will be back next week.